Welcome to Kansas City Cannabis, where local roots and city pride thrive. Whether you're new or seasoned to cannabis, our expert bud tenders offer guidance and a welcoming atmosphere at our four KC locations. Experience genuine service and hometown heart. Visit kccannabis.org for more.
Fourth quarter of the program begins right now. Four fingers in the air. We finish strong as always. Does anybody finish better than us? Really? I'm going to be honest.
I don't think so.
Rob hasn't, he's fumbled his way into the final hour with how he's running the board over there. That was a debacle. So maybe today's not the day to make that statement. Fourth quarter begins now. Need to know coming up here in a little bit. We're going to talk to Rob Doster. Rob Doster from NBC College Basketball Talk. Does a great job there for them. And we're going to talk about transfers. Here, which is going to be a big subject if this new rule comes through. Also, don't forget Coaches versus Cancer Papa Shot Championship. Big year for Coaches versus Cancer, their 25th anniversary nationwide, 10th anniversary of our tip-off event here. Qualifiers from each event below are going to form our final four. What is the event? It is Papa Shot, basically. That's what you got. There's going to be 1,000 folks at our final, plus great coaches like Bill Self, Konza Martin, Bruce Weber, Kareem Richards, Greg Marshall, Norm Stewart's going to be there. September 14th, you can qualify at the Power Play in Liberty from 2 to 7. On September 20th, Power Play in Shawnee from 3 to 7. September 23rd, Draftcade at Zona Rosa from noon to 4. And on September 26th, the Power Play in Liberty. That is from 3 to 7. It is made possible by Dimensional Invitations and us right here at Sports Radio 810 WHB. And, of course, Coaches versus Cancer. Those pop shots go to the website, 810WHB.com, for more details. Rob Doster is with us here on our Sprint guest line. Rob, how are you?
I am doing great. What's going on, man?
A lot, as a matter of fact. And I think one of the things that continues to fly under the radar is the this proposed rule. Now, I thought your take on it was very interesting. That's why we asked you to come on, and thank you for giving us the time, because your feeling is kind of like this is getting overblown, that more is being made of it than is really there, because there really aren't that many transfers that transfer up. That's the fear. The fear is that, oh, my God, Kentucky's going to take all our good players. The rule that's being proposed is that a player can transfer without sitting out. You say no, and why?
Well, I'm for this rule.
All right, I think we might have lost Rob. Let me see if we can put him on hold. Rob, see if we can get him back on there. We know Rob's for the rule.
Yeah, unless that's all he wanted to say.
That's it. I'm for the rule. I'm out.
Click.
Read my stuff, collegebasketball.nbcsports.com. See ya.
I love that idea. Yeah, I'm for the rule.
That'd see you, fellas. Had a call to talk about my AP ballot.
Really?
I should go on and be like, okay, it's available at AP.com. See ya.
I'm out.
I put it up on the website. By the way, you can see my top 25 ballots this year at 810WHB.com. Mm-hmm. So we put that up every year. All right, we've got Rob back. So, Rob, in our first conversation, we came to the conclusion that you're for the rule. After that, we're still waiting. We lost you there. I apologize, buddy. But we did get that you're for the rule. Beyond that, your reaction is what?
So my biggest takeaway is that I just think it's hypocritical to say when these student athletes want access to more money, or they don't want to be considered amateurs, or they want more than just the cost of attendance stipend or whatever. We say no, they're student athletes first and foremost. They should be worried about education. But then when it comes to being able to transfer and, go get that education at a different university, all of a sudden we're talking about how they're student athletes and it means more, and they shouldn't be able to have this free ability to transfer the way that, someone in the jazz band or a chemistry major or so any other what you would call normal student would be able to do that. So I find that inherently, hypocritical. And I'm never going to be able to get behind the idea of calling them student athletes when it's suitable, and then calling them more than just regular old students when it's suitable. So that's the core of my issue with this is right there. But the other part of it is that I just don't see how it ends up being this huge thing where people are going to start transferring. Because at the end of the day, players are going to be able to pick wherever they want to go, right? And they pick a school that they want to go to because they have a good relationship with the coach, or, you know, they like the campus, or they want to stay on the West Coast and it's going to be close to home, or, you know, they happen to grow up as a fan of this team and they want to stay there. So when it comes down to it, most transfers are for just like a handful of reasons. Either they're at the wrong level, they're playing too high and they're never going to get minutes, and they want to transfer down to get more minutes. They don't get along with the coach anymore. Or they just don't see a way where they're actually going to be able to get into the lineup, whether it's because they're a freshman point guard and there's another freshman point guard in the class that's better than them, or because they don't want to sit for 2 years and wait and end up starting as a senior. So as long as you are happy where you are, I don't really envision a scenario where you can say that these players are going to be like crazy just because they had a good year at a lower level. And even if they do, right? Even if they do end up having a good year and looking for a better opportunity, we do that everywhere else, right? Like, let's say that, you know, you have a great year on the radio, and all of a sudden, big ESPN comes calling and they offer you the job with Mike and Mike in the morning. Like, I can't imagine that's something that you wouldn't at least consider or look at. And, like, same thing for me, you know, if all of a sudden they want to pair me with Jay Billis every day, that's something that I'm going to pay attention to. It happens with coaches, too. Do you think coaches at the low major level are there because they want to be there, or they're there because they haven't gotten a better opportunity? And it's just, it's the way that it goes in life. When you do well, if you're a lawyer and you're at a small firm and then all of a sudden the big firm comes along and offers you a job because you're good at what you do, you go and take that job. It's just, that's the way that it works in life, and I don't understand why it becomes such a big issue when we're talking about college basketball players and college football players. And the last point that I want to make with this is that you are allowed to transfer without sitting out in every sport other than, I believe, it's basketball and football. And it's, I mean, college soccer still exists, right? College baseball is still standing. It hasn't been completely ruined, you know? The college volleyball still thing. Every other sport's able to survive with these rules intact. Why wouldn't it work for basketball and football? It's just, I don't know. I think people are making too big of an issue of it, and I can't get behind it. I think it's so inherently hypocritical.
All right, we're talking right now to Rob Doster from NBC College Basketball Talk. You can read his piece. It's at collegebasketball.nbcsports.com. And you said a lot there, so let me go through a couple of them. A number of things that I think, at least, I don't think there's anything, I don't think you're wrong about anything you said, but I think, you know, the shades of gray are where, or the devil's in the details, whatever cutesy little phrase you want to throw into it, are some of the things that do need to be added in here on a couple of things. Number one, you mentioned me, and if the Mike and Mike job came open, and let's just say any job that's going to pay me a lot more, right? Wherever that might be, am I going to be interested? Well, sure, I'm going to be interested. But I can tell you that, you know, I did bounce around when I was 20-something years old. And right now, at 40-something, that's a different view that I have. I have had opportunities to leave and didn't leave because, you know, you start putting down roots. But when so I don't think it's the same as any of us at other ages, we would go. We put a lot of other factors into it that are bigger. And we're frankly a little bit, I think we're more qualified to make an intelligent decision and not make just a reactionary decision. Now, your point about the other sports can transfer and other college students is 100% valid. And I'm totally with you on the standpoint of, like, it'll work. Like, what I hate is when there's a rule that people don't like, the response is always that this will crush the sport. It will be over. If this rule gets enacted tomorrow, there'll be some shaking out, right? It'll take a few years for this thing to kind of shake out and instant, you know, there'll be a little more transfers early. It's just kind of like the leaving from high school or the one and done. It takes a few years. It floods the market initially, but then all the scholarships kind of fill back up and you kind of get back to some normalcy. There would be an adjustment period, there's no doubt. But, I mean, I think one of the things the 1 year sitting out does do that's beneficial for a lot of kids is you had to have talked to a lot of kids. I've talked to a lot of kids that are like, listen, when I first got there, I wanted out. And if I'd have been able to walk, I would have left. But instead, I stayed, I learned more about the campus, more about my coach, more about my team, or I went to work, and I made myself a better player, and I recognized what I needed to do, and I'm better for it. And I think that is a lesson that should be considered. Now, I'm with you. Big picture, if we let anybody else transfer, and there are lots of kids who I'm sure in those smaller sports have transferred and went, oh, wait a minute, it's not better. That's life, man. I mean, we all got to learn our lessons, and if that's how you learn it, great. Then hopefully you take that lesson forward and don't quit your first job 3 months in. You've learned that lesson from when you transferred, and it really didn't make anything any better. So I'm with you on all that. I think moralistically, and I think that's what's driving you, Rob, if I might, I think it's absolutely right. Coaches can leave. other students can leave. Why are they contractually bound to have to apply at least part of their educational experience to one university or have to sit out a year? That's categorically unfair. But they do know that going in, right? I mean, you don't have to play Division I college football or basketball. Go play soccer then, if that's that big a rub. I mean, it is different because these are the money-generating sports, and they're the money that generate the ability for those soccer kids to play soccer and the volleyball kids to play volleyball. And you do at least have to look at, is this going to harm the moneymaker? As much as we don't like to think of it about being moneymakers, but it is. At Syracuse, they got to pay attention to whether or not basketball is going to get hosted. And at Kansas, they got to pay attention to whether or not basketball is going to be harmed, because it does generate revenue that pays for those other sports, and therefore it is different for college football and basketball players. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that is a fair point. There's two things that I'll say. One is that if they, like I said, my biggest issue is looking at students in one case and as athletes in another case. And if they were able to open this up where you got more, whatever stipend you got was more than cost of attendance, and you didn't have to worry about amateurism, and these kids could be sponsored. Like, I think I could talk myself into having a sit-out year then, because it's not going to cost the kids money, and then you actually have some kind of disincentive into the agreement that will prevent you from just leaving anytime you want. Like, with coaches, what never gets brought up in this conversation with coaches is that they have buyouts that have to get paid, right? Whether it's paid by them, paid by their agent, paid by the new school, whatever it is, if they have a contract that lasts for 5 years, and they want to leave to a bigger school, a buyout has to get paid. And that's the disincentive right there for anybody leaving. And I can get behind that with the players to sit out a year if they're able to make money on the fact that they aren't just regular students, right? Like, I think I can get behind that idea. The other thing that I wanted to mention was that, all right, so the most entertaining part about the NBA is the NBA playoffs, right? Like, I think anyone can kind of get behind that. The finals, the hype around it, Golden State, Cleveland, LeBron, Durant, everything about that is fascinating, right? The second most fascinating part about the NBA season is the offseason. Whether or not, you know, where's Paul George going to end up? What's going to happen with Kyrie Irving? Is Isaiah Thomas going to end up getting that bigger contract? Where's LeBron going to end up in 2 years? Like, the movement of the players in the NBA is almost more interesting than the regular season of the NBA, because we kind of know how the whole thing's going to end up, right? It's going to be someone from the West, probably Golden State, playing someone from the East, probably Cleveland. So there really isn't all that much interest in the regular season when it comes to the NBA. But everything in the offseason is just so fascinating. It's so interesting, and it almost dominates the conversation more than, like, Ezekiel Elliott and everything going on with him in the NFL and you know, all those different topics of debate. Like, the NBA offseason overshadows the baseball regular season from a national perspective. And if you open this up, kids can transfer immediately during the summer. All of a sudden, you have that in college basketball, too. You have a talking point. You have people interested in what's going on in college basketball outside of, the month of March and the month of February. And then, to that point, then you have, like, Kansas fans. They're going to be paying attention to some of these smaller games. Kentucky fans are going to be paying attention to some of these smaller college games, because maybe that kid averaging 23 points at Florida State, maybe he's going to end up at Kentucky next year because they need backcourt depth. Or maybe some kid at, I don't know, Kansas, Wichita State, maybe. Maybe that's a bad example of going to Kansas. But yeah, do you get what I'm saying? Like,
I do. I think it's a brilliant
at that level.
Yeah, I think it's a brilliant point. I think you're absolutely right, because we've said the exact same thing, that baseball is being overshadowed by what's going on in the NBA offseason. In fact, football, I think, even took a ding leading up to their season. Like, when you're in OTAs and all that, they kind of used to be able to just, you know, oh, look, we've got some football tape to put out there, and we can get some guys in front of a mic. And the NBA was robbing that. I think you're 100% right on that. And I think you're right about the interest level at Kansas, at Kentucky. But does it suck the life out of the rest of the schools? And because that is a great point. And I think for Kansas and for Kentucky, you know, the kids that would transfer out of Kansas and Kentucky, the coaches probably weren't gone and were going to run off anyway to go recruit over the top of them. So I'm with you. I don't think the big boys would get dinged, but I would worry, and maybe not even Wichita here, a local program, but I would certainly worry about the Illinois States and the Indiana States and maybe even down to Kansas State. Like, if you're killing it, like, I think of the way Foster burst on the scene several years ago. Now he's up at Creighton, but burst on the scene as a freshman and was you know, first team All Big 12, and it'd be like, oh, no, that's exactly the kind of lead guard we need here at, you know, say, let's not go Kentucky, but let's say at Tennessee or let's say at Florida, you know, not one or two. But you know, you talk about transferring up or down. It's all based upon where your seating is, and would it hurt an Iowa State or a Kansas State or a Colorado or some programs with some real fan bases, you know, quantity of fan bases, when I say real fan base, quantity of fan bases, that could actually end up doing more damage, or does the sucking the casual fan back in to see if Kentucky's going to get a big signing actually outweigh that?
You know, it's an interesting point. I just don't see that many situations where a kid from, like, Colorado is going to transfer to Kansas, for example, because I think that when it comes down to it, unless there's a reason for you to leave that level at Colorado, like, you have a relationship with the coaching staff, right? You have a relationship with your teammate. You have a bond with the city and the fans that you're playing there with. I think inherently you're going to want to stay. Is that, like, I don't see this becoming a thing where players are immediately going to be looking for a better option no matter what happens that year. Yes, there are going to be some, right? There are going to be some that think, okay, if I can average 12 points a game at Colorado this year, I'll be able to go to UCLA next year. And if I go to UCLA and average 15 points a game at UCLA, then I'm going to be a first-round draft pick, and that's my ticket to the big payday at the NBA. Some kids are going to think that way. And the kids that do think that way, like, maybe they will transfer, maybe they will leave, maybe they won't be committed to the program. But I feel like the way that we should be looking at this is that most kids are going to end up staying because they went there for a reason. They have relationships. They enjoy where they are. If they don't enjoy where they are, then they're going to leave. But I don't think we should look at this from the assumption that, like, every kid is going to want to leave. We have to find ways to convince them to want to stay. Because I just think the natural instinct for everybody is going to be, like, you don't want to break your comfort zone. So, I mean, that's a valid concern, I guess. But frankly, the way that it's currently set up, as long as these guys are in a situation where they are looked at as students when it comes to being able to get paid, and they're looked at as not regular students when it comes to their ability to transfer, like, it just, that argument just really doesn't matter to me, because that inherent hypocrisy involved in the way that they're viewed when it's better for the NCAA or for coaches, for anybody that has the power to view them that way, I can't get behind that idea.
We're talking to Rob Doster from NBC College Basketball Talks. He's written the piece about the new proposed transfer rule that's out there for the NCAA. Go to collegebasketball.nbcsports.com if you want to read it online, or I would recommend, I love their app, if you get their Sports Talk app, which has the pro football. That's where pro football gets all the love, but you guys do a great job on the College Basketball Talk, the College Football Talk, the Hardball Talk, all your different sports, NASCAR, pro hockey, pro soccer, NBA, motorsports. It's all up there. It's great stuff, so I'd recommend you get the app as well. Rob, I agree, like I said, with about 95% of everything you said. Let me double back to what you talked about, you know, basically what I would call nobility, or what's fair and right and honest about, you know, what we've discussed, that all these other sports kids can transfer, coaches can leave and coach immediately. They don't have to sit out a year to start coaching it. What about the aspect, who is driving this? Who's pushing this forward? Like, where is this rule coming from? It does seem to be, I'm with you, that for the most part, guys transfer down. And for the most part, the guys that transfer down, the teams don't mind. Like I said, I think they're probably shoving them right out the door, looking to recruit what they expect to be better players over the top of them. But this is a rule that then does open it up, I think, for Power Fives. When guys do move up, it's usually, you know, they're coming from, they're 24 a game at Holy Cross and Tennessee's grabbing them. You know, it's usually, and I think in the piece you even talked about somebody who transferred and how it was kind of mislabeled as he was moving down, when in reality he was moving up because he was leaving Mount St. Mary's, who were 20 and 16, this is Elijah Long, and going to Texas, who was 11 and 22. Well, we know that's a step up program-wise. The truly elites are going to leave, though, right? I mean, that this would seem to be fueled by, you talked about the Power Six, we throw the Big East in with the usual Power Five football leagues. This is fueled by them, right? Because the guys who leave them, they really don't want anyway. But the ones that they did miss on scholarship-wise, they can now gobble up and fill holes with. They're probably the ones driving this again, like they drive a lot of the change that's going on over on the football side of things. It is the power schools, isn't it?
Yeah, probably. But I do think that there is a segment of the power schools that don't want this because it makes it that much more difficult when you get some of these kids that are highly touted prospects coming in. And, you know, if you got to yell at them, there are a lot of coaches that are worried about, you know, if I yell at this one kid too much or try to get him to play too much defense or make him sit on the bench too much, then he's going to end up transferring. So I don't know if it's just the Power Five schools. To be honest, I don't even think that this is really going to end up being a thing. The reason it became a talking point was because 24/7 Sports put out a report that this was under consideration. There's no proposals. There's no vote. This is being investigated. Well, investigated is the wrong word. The Division I Transfer Working Group, which is actually the name of the group of people doing this, is just doing their due diligence on whether or not this is something that would actually be feasible. They are talking to coaches and administrators and reading the columns from media members and doing all that because guys like me have been taking it so long, transfers should be allowed to be immediately eligible. So this is simply that group doing their homework to make sure they understand what the implications would be were they to actually consider this and make it an actual proposal. So the way that it currently stands, I don't see a situation where a rule change actually comes into play while anybody currently on a college campus would actually be able to take advantage of it. So I think that the idea this would happen is a long, long way down the road. The reaction to it, I think, has been a little bit overblown, but it's become such a hot-button topic because it's weird that we're actually having, like, a normal conversation about this because it's really difficult to find two people to actually have a little bit of middle ground. Normally, it's just like transfers have to stay or transfers, they have to be able to get eligible immediately. They can't get eligible immediately. We should have them sit out for 2 years. So I'm glad that we can actually have some real conversation about
well,
it.
Rob.
Feel good about the future of humanity.
Well, Rob, it's because we're the only two guys on the planet that get it, right? I mean, obviously.
I say that a lot.
Yeah, you know, it's good to finally meet the other guy because it's clearly not the two people I sit and stare at all day. I'll tell you that for sure. No, but your point is a good one. And we do try here in the program. I just belittle what was a very kind thing that you said, and I agree, and it's something we talk about a lot, is it's okay to disagree and to look for common ground and to, you know, the whole political landscape is such a debacle and is the exact opposite of what you just said there. I agree. I think when you got a couple of people that care about something, you and I obviously both care about college basketball, and then you think big picture and you're open-minded to the possibility of some other people's thoughts and ideas, it's amazing. You can actually find a common ground, but, you know, I digress. Hopefully we're not the only two. All right, so then my last question to you, Rob, before I give you my final four is, what do you think will happen with this? Is that it? It's just a little something. It's just the normal part of conversations that go on. This one got leaked out. It never had any life really to happen. And so it's much ado about nothing? Or do you think it was maybe a trial balloon floated? And let's see what the reaction is.
I think that eventually this rule change is going to end up happening. I just think that there's too much of a push on our side. And I think there's too many people are starting to realize that sports at that level is big business. So I think one of two things is going to end up happening. We're going to see some kind of tweak to the amateurism rule, or we're going to see transfers allowed to be immediately eligible. And the other part of it that we haven't even discussed here is that there is an academic component tied to it. And the number that I've heard floated about is a 2.6 GPA, which isn't a great GPA, but which is enough where, you know, I was basically a 2.6 student and I did okay. So
braggart.
It's enough where you actually have to prove that you care about getting your grades. Because I think in most colleges, you can kind of just coast by and get it too well and stay eligible for athletics. But if you're into a 2.6, like you're actually kind of trying a little bit harder than normal, I guess. So that's something that hasn't really been discussed with this, is there is that academic component. But I do think that eventually it probably will end up happening, but it's so far down the road that it's really hard to kind of project.
All right.
We're looking at something that might be 4 years ahead.
It turns out I'm a complete liar because you made me think of something else because when you said that, I agree with you. I do like that. That is an important part of the equation to put in there is that you do have to at least show that you're bothering to go to class and not just – you know, getting your way past there. But therefore, are you like me then, and you got no problem with the graduate transfers going? Like, I hear we got a guy here, Danny, who I love and I respect, a very bright sports guy, but is, of course, dead wrong on a lot of things, and this one is one of them, in my humble opinion, and that is he can't stand the graduate transfers. And he's like, it's ruining college basketball. I mean, I think it's the one thing we do for the student-athlete. The guy got his degree, and so now we'll let him transfer without sitting out. It's like a reward for being a good student. I think it's like the only honest thing in big-time sports. Do you agree?
My only issue with it is that the rule, it's gotten to the point where the rule is being abused so that it's not, you're not going to school to get a graduate degree. You're just going to a different school to go play a higher level of basketball. So I think the one change, I love it. I think the players should be rewarded for it. But I think that the one change that is probably going to happen, and I haven't decided if I love this change or not, but I think that it will happen, is that if you are a graduate transfer and you go to a new school, your scholarship is going to count for 2 years. So it's basically going to be you really want that kid instead of just bringing a guy in because you need a body in practice or you want to make sure that you have 13 scholarships filled. Because what kind of ended up happening, like there are the guys that are really, really good that we all talk about and we all know about and all, you know, end up being important pieces and starters on NCAA tournament teams. But a lot of times these guys are just transferring up and then they don't really end up being anything for the team that they end up at because the team that they end up at is just looking for another body, some more experience, an insurance in case, you know, their starting center ends up blown out of knee or something like that. So I think what's going to end up happening is if you have that scholarship count for 2 years, the 2 years that it would take to get most graduate degrees or master's degrees, it will prevent some of these schools from just taking the kid for the simple fact they want to take a kid.
But what's wrong?
Does that make sense? And I think
it does. It does. But again, on your nobility piece, what's wrong with the kid just being the back? I mean, KU had that kid who came in and they've already cycled him out. Like, nope. Everybody all of a sudden thought Bagley was coming. What was the kid from Holy Cross's name? Was there for like 16 minutes and then William and Mary, whatever, same kind of thing, similar unis. You know, and he was gone. I get it. I mean, they're not really doing anything with it, but so what? So the kid got to come and practice and be a part of Jayhawk basketball. What's the worst?
Yeah, I know, and that's why I haven't decided if I love that change.
Ooh, but I hate it.
The change does make sense because it makes sure that the bigger schools actually want these kids. Because I understand like from the mid-major perspective where you're a coach, you develop these kids for 4 years, you redshirt them, you have it all set up so you have this star fifth-year senior on your roster, and he's going to carry you to NCAA tournament glory, and then he up and leaves on you. And it creates an incentive for some of these coaches to not let their kids graduate in 3 or 4 years. So I think in actuality, getting rid of the graduate transfer rule would actually be bad for some of these kids. Bad for some of these kids. No. It would be better overall for them academically because it would let these coaches actually want them to graduate and get that degree and do it in as quick as possible. So anything you can do to make the graduate transfer something that is wanted in college basketball, I think is a good thing because the other option is coaches just vote to get rid of it. And I think there are enough mid-major coaches that vote would actually pass. So having a way to keep it where it's not just kids leaving for the sake of leaving,
right,
but kids leaving because they actually want that academic opportunity keeps the rule in place more than it does.
I see what you're saying.
Yeah. So it's like the lesser of two evils. Like
you're saying change is coming. So let's take a change that still gives them the chance to do it as opposed to just watching it go bye-bye.
Exactly, yeah. And it buys into what the spirit of the rule is, instead
right,
of what the loophole has kind of turned into.
Okay, I like that. I'm fine with that. Rob Doster is with us from NBC College Basketball Talk. My Final Four is brought to you by our friends at the Kansas Lottery. It is here. This year's Holiday Millionaire Raffle is underway. Tickets sell for $20 each. Go to kslottery.com for details. Let's start you with this one. Number one, the 2018 college basketball champion will be who?
I am going to go with Michigan State.
Oh, boy. Michigan State. Okay. What'd you hear, the M? Curtis threw his arms in the air. What'd you think of the M? Was Missouri?
I heard Missouri.
Yeah, okay. So Michigan State. all right, so Michael Porter Jr. or Marvin Bagley III, who will be the better player?
Oof, that one's tough. I think that Marvin Bagley III is going to be a better player, but I think that Michael Porter Jr. is going to have much better numbers this year. I wouldn't be surprised to see him average something like 22-12, like Carmelo at Syracuse kind of numbers.
Okay. That's I lived through that. So, I wasn't there. I rooted for that. I'm much older than that. But all right. How many titles for Bill Self when it's all said and done? I was asked this on our Sunday Sound Off TV show on Sunday. So how many more has he got in him? He just went into the Hall of Fame. He's got one. What does he finish with?
I'm going to say he finishes with three. Let's assume he coaches until he's 70. That's 20 more years, right?
Yep.
Eventually, Coach K and Coach Cal are going to be out of his way, and he's going to start getting all the best players in the country again. And, I'm going to say three total.
And Jim Calhoun won his second and third titles at 62 and 69. It seems like Coach's best work is done in their 60s these days, and he hasn't even gotten there yet. All right, and finally, last night U2 was here at Arrowhead. What's your favorite U2 song?
Oh, man. I'm not really a U2 guy, if I'm going to be honest. I don't know if it's going to get me kicked off the show.
No, it will not. I would like to have been there. I couldn't make it. Just to say I saw U2. I'm not a huge fan, but I have my favorite. You don't have one song that is on your iPod from U2? Or, I'm sorry, your iPhone? I'm dating myself.
Actually, I do. How about this? So, however, I don't know how this happens, but whenever I start my car and the Bluetooth kicks into the phone, it automatically starts playing those random U2 songs that get put on every single iPhone. Remember when that happened a couple years ago?
Yes.
So it randomly starts playing some song from that playlist. I don't know how. I don't know where. I don't know why. I've tried to delete them. I can't figure it out. But the first thing I do every morning when I start my car is listen to a little bit of U2. I couldn't tell you the name of the song, though.
Okay. I'll take that. Sunday Bloody Sunday for me. So, but I'll go there. Was not there doing Joshua Tree or Rattle and Hum? What were they doing last night? Joshua Tree doing that album last night, so that wasn't on there. But nonetheless, hey, great stuff, Rob. Love your work. You always do a fantastic job. Thanks for giving us a lot of your time because I went quite a ways with you. I appreciate it, and look forward to talking to you again down the road.
Thanks for having me on, man.
You bet. Rob Doster from NBC Sports Talk does a great job. College basketball, like I said, the app, it's a great one. I advise you to get it as a sports fan. You'll really enjoy it. All the latest stories are hitting up there on a timeline based upon each and every sport that's up there. We will take a break, come back. We're going to hear what Alex Smith had to say in an interview with Graham Benzinger. If you ever see me on Sunday Sound Off on 41, you know he's the guy that comes on after us. He's the follow-up after us. After Mick Schaefer, after the A-team is Graham Benzinger. And Alex Smith apparently talking about his future. We'll hear that next here in the program.